drive through the gate of a South Carolina nuclear power plant. 66-year-old Arkansas man Doyle Wisenhunt's been charged with attempted murder.
Officials say he drove a silver Toyota Camry up to the security entrance of a Coney nuclear station where he was denied access. When a security officer followed him, Wisenhunt then allegedly accelerated his car toward a security officer while trying to get away, escaping onto a nearby highway. Officials say they later located the Camry about 30 miles away.
ABC's Am Nguyen. The Israeli military not letting up on its assault in Gaza despite another visit by Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who called for a humanitarian pause. It was Blinken's third visit to Israel since the war began. At least 128 people have died, dozens more injured after a strong earthquake struck a remote part of Nepal. The major Republican candidates for president, including frontrunner Donald Trump, appearing this weekend at the Florida Freedom Summit. This is ABC News. Public school students in Portland are now on break indefinitely after teachers went on strike this week.
The Portland Association of Teachers, they're calling for higher wages, about a 20% pay increase, smaller class sizes, and more planning time. Now, those demands coming with a $220 million price tag for the district, and the district says they do not have the funds to meet the union's current demands because the state has not given them the budget. Well, the governor telling the school district to work with the resources they have.
ABC's Melissa Adun. The battle over gun control set to play out in the Supreme Court. The justices will decide if the nation's bump stock ban is illegal. The Justice Department issuing the ban after 59 people were shot and killed in Las Vegas in 2017. That's the deadliest mass shooting in American history. And the Biden administration is awarding $334 million in grants to help police agencies hire more officers, address school security, and offer more training on de-escalation techniques. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Small businesses represent the lifeblood of every community. In Wisconsin, small businesses represent 99.4% of all businesses. Their importance to our economy, especially our rural livelihood, cannot be overstated. Entrepreneurs must be innovative and have a growth mindset in order to keep pace. Business owners and employees of small businesses can attend a free presentation by small business expert Fred Hochberg. Hochberg is former head of the Small Business Administration, the Export-Import Bank of the United States, and the Lillian Vernon Corporation. His presentation, Small Business Growth Strategies in Rural Communities, takes place on Wednesday, November 8th at the UW Green Bay Marinette Campus. Hochberg will share ideas for how rural businesses can thrive in today's marketplace. Funding for the presentation comes from the Tommy G. Thompson Center for Public Leadership. For more information on Fred Hochberg's November 8th presentation, Small Business Growth Strategies in Rural Communities, and to register for this free event, visit thompsoncenter.wisc.edu. That's thompsoncenter.wisc.edu.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you. You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold, 1993 to 1999, and again 2001.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The holidays will be here before you know it. People who support animal-friendly diets would like you to consider vegan meals for your big gatherings. Here's more from Mike Moan.
For holidays like Thanksgiving, turkey is still the staple. Mary Telfer, with the Wisconsin-based organization Alliance for Animals, says they urge everyone to avoid eating meat this holiday season due to animal treatment concerns, human health, and environmental impacts from food production. For people on the fence about making the switch, she says you can lean into vegan options.
And they think, how can I do this and still please my family? How can I do this and still keep up our traditions? I mean, yeah, try some different things.
She says you can sample vegan food before the holidays, noting there are now countless websites and cookbooks with recipes. And Telfer says if you feel like you need to serve meat to your guests, you can offset the impact by using sides like non-dairy whipped cream. And staples like mashed potatoes and cranberries can still complement the meal. And if you're worried about missing out on protein, Telfer recommends you load up on protein-rich vegetables such as peas. As for considering a vegan holiday meal, she feels it shouldn't be as controversial as some might think.
We don't think it's strange when we welcome progress, when it comes in the form of technology or the newest phone or laptop, and yet we have a harder time embracing progress in how we think about our non-human animal friends.
Beyond the treatment of animals, she says industrialized food production creates land use issues for future generations, threatens wildlife habitat while adding to pollution woes that harm human health. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Forecast, mainly clear this afternoon with highs around 45. Winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Overcast, tonight lows level off around 33. Overcast again tomorrow, chance for scattered rain showers, highs level off around 51. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 46.
From I-43 to I-41, this is the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM, WGBW.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Krebscast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and here is today's episode. Colleen Maraca joins me in the podcast studio today. Colleen, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Eric Larson is our guest today, and he is, first of all, he's a guy from Wisconsin who grew up with a love of the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And he reached out to you originally to
Krebscast or something, or I don't know, but yeah, as soon as you saw the stuff on the email, you're like, let's get him in.
Yeah, because this guy has been to the North Pole a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And on his most recent excursion, you were kind of able to see the real effects of climate change. He did essentially an episode with Discovery Channel going to the North Pole, showing sort of in real time what's happening with the shrinking ice. But he was able to do it. And I think just the connection he gives to these places that we often do not see yet are often the most hard hit by climate change. It offers a real interesting perspective on sort of our connection with the natural world. And of course, things we can do to help with climate change and all that. Mm-hmm. And one of the big ones is just making sure you get out and enjoy what we have right here in our own backyard and in Wisconsin, or really any state. But I'll speak to Wisconsin since I know it. We have so many state parks. We have national parks. We have the Ice Age Trail, the Apostle Islands. There's so many local ways to just get out and enjoy what we have here. Mm-hmm. And I think by that enjoyment, you then are inspired to keep it and keep it for future generations.
The cool part about the interview that I liked, though, was him talking about his encounters with polar bears.
Yeah.
Like bears just, yeah. It's like, what is it? Brown, get down. Black, attack. And white, good night, because you're going to die if you run into a polar bear.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. They are one of the bears that hunt you. But also the reason, you know, they're even like creating more human encounters is because they're losing sea ice and everything. And that's how they hunt seals. So that it's kind of like everything has its own place. But if you are in their territory, you know, then you're kind of fair game. They were stalked by them. And they're moving these 100-pound sleds with them along the way. I mean, it's just crazy what he does.
It was cool.
But really interesting conversation. Wisconsin guy. I think you all will enjoy this quite a bit. And with that, let's get to my conversation with polar explorer Eric Larson. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Where are you at right now?
I am in Colorado. That's where I live now.
A
small mountain town around almost 9,000 feet. It's awesome. Think like Bayfield, but in the mountains.
Oh, that's nice. What's the name of the town?
Called Crested Butte.
Crested Butte. So Bayfield. So the kind of that Bayfield vibe, or are you saying like population of Bayfield?
A lot of sailboats. Just kidding.
I was just going to say, is what the going on up there?
Same vibe. Kind of like quirky place, people real focused on outdoor stuff. It's the same, you know, like our town is like around 2,000 people. So like the whole school is just one building, K through 12, and just surrounded by wilderness, basically. So it's awesome.
It's great. I gotta say, man, you are you're nuts. You're absolutely nuts. You know, I don't know how to say it in another way, but I mean it in the best way. like watching, you know, watching you and your teammate on that excursion to the North Pole was mind blowing. The fact, yeah, I mean, you know, to give the audience sort of just a general sense of it, you guys are carrying 300 pounds, 300 plus, 380 some odd pounds. You're pulling that sled up these chunks of ice. And, you know, on your first couple days in, you've only gone like, I don't know, 6 miles or something of hundreds of miles. And you got a tight deadline for a plane to come pick you up, or you're just stranded in the ocean forever. You know, yeah. I mean, it's really, I think, inspiring to see how far you push, I think, the human limits of, you know, what's possible inside yourself. And at the same time, showcasing how our planet is changing. So I very much so like applaud you for that. But, you know, I think let's kind of start at the beginning. Like, where did you grow up and what inspired you to go to the North Pole, to go to Everest, to go to all these crazy places? What inspired it?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I'm a huge fan. I've gone down the rabbit hole on your stuff.
Nice.
Quite a bit. And so I appreciate the opportunity, and it's fun to be able to have these types of conversations.
You are from Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah. I'm a proud Wisconsinite. I grew up just north of Milwaukee, Cedarburg. A pretty normal childhood. I love my hometown. I love going back.
It's gorgeous, man. Cedarburg, really. They got that river running through it. The nice downtown, man. It's totally. It's like a low-key, very idyllic place to exist.
It's like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, basically. And, you know, our big line as kids was, it's the, and I don't know if this is still the case, but it was like the second biggest tourist attraction in Wisconsin, which is, was our claim to fame that we wore pretty proudly on our shirts. So
what's the first biggest tourist attraction in Wisconsin?
I mean, it must be Wisconsin Dells, I think.
You can't beat Wisconsin Dells.
No, it's, you can try, but you're still just the second biggest.
Yeah. Which, yeah.
I don't know what the numbers on it. It speaks both highly and poorly of Wisconsin Dells, because I don't know what the numbers are on Wisconsin Dells to beat out Cedarburg. Is it a lot, or it doesn't seem like it would take much? You know what I mean?
You know,
it's like two more
Cedarburg's
people.
Really nice, man. You know, and they got the House on the Rock kind of in that area. I mean, you know, Rick Wilcox's Magic Castle, the Trojan Horse go-karts. I mean, it's no small feat to beat out Wisconsin Dells in this situation.
Yeah, well, we can always hope. I don't know. Maybe I'll get some of my friends to go visit and we'll just get the tally up to number one. Maybe that's a thing.
There you go. So you grew up in Cedarburg.
Yeah, I loved it. You know, I was a pretty average, probably about as average as you could get, like, just was like the slowest kid on my soccer team, and not terrible student, but pretty average. Like, no one would have looked at me and been like, oh yeah, that kid's going places, you know. They would have been like, oh, Eric, and then moved on to the next thing. So, but I think for me, I was always interested in being outside, and I was trying to figure out the world around me, and I was curious, and I loved camping. And So I was just trying to get out and do things, and back then, you know, there wasn't this big network of people. There wasn't a way to connect in any sort of real way. And so I just started doing things, and I got interested in biking, and I got a paper out and saved up a bunch of money and bought a bicycle. And then I was gone. And that was like, I mean, I was 12 years old and I was with a map and just riding my bike for, you know, 60, 70, 100 miles over the weekend. And, you know, I would go into bars and Packers game would be on and I would get a Coke, and then I would be in all my spandex, you know, and and that was in the 80s. And so people did not look well at that, you know, going to some of these just kind of random rural bars and, you know, a 12, 13 year old kid riding a road bike, you know, like Lance Armstrong wasn't a thing. And, but I loved it because I was on my own. I was out kind of just discovering the world around me. And I just started doing more of those things. Like I would just kind of always wrangle my friends into doing things. Like I'm like, let's canoe our river that runs through our town, Cedar Creek. But I'm like, I would get my mom to drive me up farther. And then we would I want to do more of it. So we would just like portage the canoe down Main Street, Cedarburg, so that we could keep going. And so I just was doing a lot of those things and was always really interested in being outside and just kind of discovering the world around me and in whatever way I could.
That's really cool. Biking was kind of the way I first got into outdoors as well. I was a bike mechanic
in
high school.
So yeah. Was I.
Oh, where at?
Well, in Grafton, and I loved that job. It was Grafton Ski and Cyclery at the time. I worked there from the time I was 16 to my mid-20s, and I was a bike racer too eventually. But that job I credit with a lot of just problem-solving skills.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything. I mean, I spent a lot of time fixing bikes, but I did sales as well. But just, you know, getting these old jalopies in there and trying to figure out what was going on, and 3-speed hubs and blah, blah, blah. And there was no YouTube to look at. And
no.
So it was, you know, it was just figuring things out. But and that job also allowed me, I love bikes. I call myself the world's most boring person, because when I was a kid, I loved camping and bikes. And, you know, however many years later, I still love camping and bikes. Yeah. But where'd you work?
I was over at few places. I did Wheel and Sprocket, and I did Willie Bikes in Madison.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't, I'm going to say, the best mechanic in the world by any stretch. Arguably not great at all. But, you know, I did my time there. No, I was okay. You know what I really like about just being a bike mechanic is, like, especially at an early age, it just gives you a general understanding of mechanics. Even if you don't have that kind of a mind, you just have a little bit more that becomes intuitive. So that this is the best part about being a bike mechanic, is you can start to Frankenstein your own bike, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I remember, I don't know what my dad was thinking, but thankfully he just didn't say much of anything, but I took his bike, and this was like, I started working in the late 80s. And so that, like, I have pictures of our bike shop, and it was all pink and yellow and, you know, fluorescent colors back then. And, we had this like cable housing that was fluorescent pink. And so I took my dad's bike and I, you know, put fluorescent pink cable housing and all the brakes and derailleurs. And then I wrapped his bars in like fluorescent yellow, and he was just like, okay. But it worked well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very bike mechanic thing to do. Just totally. Like make it look like unnecessarily weird, you know?
Oh yeah.
Semi-flashy. Well,
and back then there was no real, like, the cool factor was just tacky, straight up. Tacky. Yeah. So we didn't really have any sort of elegance or style. It was just like, oh, here's these like fluorescent colors and let's put on our Oakley razor blades. And, you know, I mean, they made seat covers for a while that were just like these nylon things that were like leopard, like pink leopard skin seat covers.
Oh, I've seen those with the little, with the zip up. You cinch them in the back.
And then it just ended, you know. It was like that the only way to quit that stuff is like cold turkey. You know, you can't go to, you can't go to rehab for that. You can't, right. You know, you just gotta like, and then it was done. And then we were in like forest green and maroon, you know.
Kurt Cobain was like the he was the cold turkey of it all, you know. The grunge scene came around and then people were done with it.
Yeah.
Well, so you're a bike mechanic and you're in Wisconsin and you're doing your thing. You're exploring on the weekends, biking around. And do you just slowly get more and more aggressive with your explorations?
Yeah. I mean, it's a slow burn. You know, unfortunately, I don't have the exciting, like I opened up a book or like someone stopped me on the street or whatever story. Yeah, I was, you know, I got involved in a couple of groups that were doing trips. My family did a lot of camping as well. And then by the time I was in, I think high school, I started planning my own trips with friends. And so we did a trip down the Namekagon and St. Croix River. And then we started going up to the Boundary Waters. And, you know, at first it was like a week and then it was a couple weeks, you know, and it was just amazing. I kind of think back on those times. I was just so green. I didn't know anything. We would get lost, turned around, you know, like whatever, get caught in storms, have accidents. And I loved every minute of it. I loved it. And I was also, I think another big Wisconsin thing, which I've heard you kind of mention, which I think is part of where this all comes from, is this idea of up north. You know, like everybody always talks about going up north. And so I was always really interested in going farther north and just kind of that transition into more wilderness. I always loved it. And going up to northern Wisconsin and just being in more wild areas. And as a result, I was obsessed with Alaska too. And which was, you know, the kind of the last frontier of wilderness. And I also read a lot of books. I read a lot of expedition books, exploration, adventure books. So I had all these things in my mind. But when I graduated college, I got a job in Alaska as a backcountry ranger. And then my world just opened up because I was like, oh, this is what a mountain is. You know, I had never really seen a mountain before. I hadn't been out of the Midwest. You know, I had been nowhere. And then I was just like, man, this is amazing. And I, you know, was howled at wolves and was had close encounters with grizzly bears and glaciers. And I was just like, man, how can I get more of this stuff? And I realized there that if you were willing to accept, you know, uncertainty, like if you didn't have a straight path and you weren't necessarily worried about making money, there were a lot of opportunities that exist out there, and all you got to be willing to do is take them. And so that was kind of the path that I was on after that. And, you know, it wasn't like just going up. There was a lot of setbacks. You know, I was making no money so much of the time. And, you know, it was back then there was no such thing as a tiny home. I was living in a shack and, you know, it wasn't a status symbol or living out of your car wasn't like van life. It was just like, you suck, you know? And, so it was challenging, but that was kind of the trajectory. And I eventually got into, I wanted to be somewhere where there was more winter. And so I moved to Grand Marais, Minnesota. A neighbor from my hometown was building a cabin. So I went up just as a odd job and doing some carpentry work. And I just happened to stumble into this job at this resort as a dog musher. And, you know, then I was like, man, all the things kind of clicked together. I was like, I'd never even seen a sled dog.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
So you went, you were in Alaska at this point. And you went to Minnesota for more winter. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny because I came back. Well, it was, you know, it's hard because you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, I had gone up to Alaska and that was my kind of first big experience, you know, out on my own after college. And I had planned on staying up there, but I wanted to come back and see some friends and, you know, do all the things that I thought I was missing. And I ended up getting stuck in Wisconsin with no car and whatever. So I didn't get back to Alaska. And so, you know, there's always a little kind of roadblocks in the way. And eventually I would end up in northern Minnesota. Yeah. So I don't have too many regrets because all the bad things get you to the good places as well. But I always think, man, I could have ended up in Alaska, and I've been back many times and whatnot, but it's every time I go, I'm like, oh man, this place is awesome.
Yeah. I love how, you know, you're always kind of have been, you were always obsessed with up north, and you got to the most up north place you could get to on Earth.
Yes, you know, that's true.
The North Pole.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for let's dive into that. So this was a Discovery that put out this that you shot this for?
Yeah, it was so I've done a bunch of North Pole expeditions. I did one in 2006, which was the first ever summer North Pole expedition. I did another one in 2010 as well, but the North Pole for me has always been just this unique environment that's so unlike any other place on the planet. It's just, you're traveling across an ocean that's covered with a thin layer of ice. It's brutally difficult. And so a big part of my mission is kind of telling stories of places and connecting to people to these places that are so, you know, distant and kind of out of mind of people. And so I really wanted to film and share the story of an expedition to the North Pole. And that was kind of the trajectory that I was working on. And I just got lucky. I got a call from Animal Planet at the time, which is a Discovery Network. And they're like, hey, what are you doing that would make a good movie? And I'm like, have I got the story for you, you know? And so they're like, well, here's like a very tiny chunk of change. Go film it. And if you come out alive, we'll see if we can make a movie out of it. And so they didn't want to take the risk of any sort of bigger commitment because they're like, well, we don't know what's going to happen. And I'm like, well, that's the beauty of it. You know, that's what a real adventure is. There's an uncertain outcome. We had kind of set some big goals and also we're filming it. And for me, that was really the most important, was to be able to tell a story of that place through our journey, which is kind of that personal connection, to really help people better understand what it was like. So, and it turned out well. I mean, I think the narration is a little over the top, but I think the story, it's not fake reality, you know, like we weren't up there staging anything. We were filming it all ourselves. It's a challenging environment, just sitting there, let alone trying to do all that other junk. And so, yeah, I'm proud of that. And it was many years ago now, but it's still something that I look at as one of my biggest accomplishments, I would say, or bigger accomplishments for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there were a few things that stuck out to me as just, wow, this is an incredible landscape. And you guys are mind-blowing, the risk that you take. You know, you're standing on that rubbery ice, you know. Yes. and this is ice that connects two different ice chunks of the North Pole, and you know, you're basically, if the ice cracks, then the salt deteriorates the ice, you know, but you're basically on these skis on this rubbery thing, and then you actually swim, you get in the water in a dry suit and you swim, I don't know, 100 yards to the next thing, and you get out and you pull your other buddy over. I mean, polar bears, you know, like you had polar bears tracking you a few times in the thing. I mean, these are some really intense environmental I don't know. It's so wild because I've done a little bit of sort of the backpacking and all that. I did the Appalachian Trail. I did the Bighorn Mountains. And even just being maybe 10, 20 miles out in the wilderness, when you're climbing up, we were climbing up a waterfall. I was climbing up with my buddy. I was like, man, one slipped rock.
Oh, yeah.
I'm done, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
totally.
Maybe, you know, a helicopter could come probably. Where you are, no. I mean, if you get hypothermia, you're dead within, you know, an hour or something. I don't know. It's just insane the kind of risk that you guys were taking. Do you just get to that gradually over time, or do you have something that's always been inside you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, first of all, risk, I think, is relative to your knowledge, experience, and preparation. So
you're saying I'm an idiot. Is what you're saying, which I appreciate. I am. You figured that out.
I don't necessarily like to call people out right away without knowing them that well, but if that's what it comes to, yeah,
it is.
No, you're not an idiot. You're just inexperienced. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's also true. That's also very true.
I mean, where, you know, there's the classic line. It's like, where does good judgment come from? And it's bad judgment, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a level of risk in being in those situations and being so far removed from any sort of, you know, rescue. That being said, it's calculated, and it's also, you know, a function of our experience, our training, you know, our ability to, deal with uncertainty and kind of unknowns as they come up. And I do feel you get better at that, both physically from like, oh, I can do this and fix this, to philosophically, which is just kind of like taking a mental hand and pushing down all that fear and anxiety to be able to go. And so, you know, my first North Pole expedition, I was skiing on the ice and I was just crying the whole time because I was so scared. And slowly you just start getting better at it. And, you know, and it's not like I just went to that North Pole for the first time. I mean, I was doing all sorts of camping trips. I was going to the Boundary Waters. I was backpacking. I was riding my bike. I mean, all this stuff. And so it's this process of getting there. And that, and I would say, the risk for my types of expeditions are, you know, a little less than, you know, say someone on the side of the mountain with no rope. You know, they sneeze and they fall 1,000 feet. I fall like, you know, a couple feet, and then I brush the snow off the ground and keep going on. But
right,
it's an interesting process overall, for sure.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A suspect in custody after police say he tried to drive through the gate of a South Carolina nuclear power plant. 66-year-old Arkansas man Doyle Wisenhunt's been charged with attempted murder.
Officials say he drove a silver Toyota Camry up to the security entrance of a Coney nuclear station where he was denied access. When a security officer followed him, Wisenhunt then allegedly accelerated his car toward a security officer while trying to get away, escaping onto a nearby highway. Officials say they later located the Camry about 30 miles away.
ABC's Sam Nguyen. The Israeli military not letting up on its assault in Gaza despite another visit by Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who called for a humanitarian pause. It was Blinken's third visit to Israel since the war began. At least 128 people have died, dozens more injured after a strong earthquake struck a remote part of Nepal. The major Republican candidates for president, including frontrunner Donald Trump, appearing this weekend at the Florida Freedom Summit. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It's the Badgers at Indiana. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers face off against the Indiana Hoosiers at Memorial Stadium in Bloomington. Indiana made a change last month, hiring Rod Carey as their new offensive coordinator. The 52-year-old was born and raised in Madison, Wisconsin. How's their offense improved? Badgers head coach Luke Fickell.
You know, I think this is a team that's creating and generating some momentum. I think they're playing better. You know, I think they're into a rhythm a little bit more offensively than maybe they were in the first five games as they made the switch. but it's going to be about special teams. It's going to be about making sure we can eliminate big plays and creating them some way, somehow for us offensively.
NFL, the Packers host the Rams on Sunday. On defense, safety Rudy Ford is questionable after missing practice with a calf injury. Running back Aaron Jones wore a red no-contact jersey all week in practice, just like the quarterbacks, as he comes back from that lingering hamstring injury. Matt LaFleur.
He did a great job. We did that for his own protection.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio. Refreshed.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly clear this afternoon with highs around 45. Winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Overcast tonight, lows level off around 33. Overcast again tomorrow, chance for scattered rain showers. Highs level off around 51. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 47.
Mino and the Mayor.
Very honored to have Chester Markle joining us.
You had some challenges with alcohol. You have done a great job getting that message out.
You know, it takes a long time to get it for some people. You know, my responsibility to every community and every place I go is to give back what others gave to me when I didn't know how to get it.
Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
Dynio Clay Products in Green Bay salutes our emergency first responders. That's law enforcement, firefighters, and medical professionals for their commitment and bravery. They're willing to put their lives on the line for us with little or no thanks. This thank you is from Dynio Clay Products in Green Bay, your brick, stone, and fireplace experts since 1914. You can give them a call at 920-498-8549. You can visit online at gagnonclayproducts.com. They're saying thank you to all of our first responders.
It's fully leaded education talk.
Hard facts with a humorous twist.
Check out Busted Pencils, Tuesdays at 7 on the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW, and on the Civic Media app.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe. And is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning, and the Talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Folks, if you're just tuning in now, I am talking with fellow Wisconsinite and polar explorer Eric Larson. You've been to the North Pole, as you said, over the past... first time was in 06, or when was your first time to the...
Yeah, 06. Yeah.
Since 06 and since going back, what are the changes that you've seen in the North Pole, specifically as it relates to climate change?
Yeah, I mean, the nature and character of the ice is dramatically different. So the first thing is, and if you read back to some of the historical expeditions from the 1800s, 1900s, and even in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you see that these people would go across a big, huge sheet of ice, and it would just be huge and miles across. And then they would come to kind of one of those transition zones where those two pans or sheets of ice would collide up against each other. And then there'd be huge blocks of ice. It's called a pressure ridge. And then you get over it and be in another big sheet of ice. And we saw that a lot in 2006 as well. We would ski for miles across these big pans. And over time, the ice has become thinner. And so what you see now is that ice, as it moves around, it breaks up more and becomes more fractured and pressured. And so you don't see these big extents of ice anymore. You see less big flat areas and more just continual rough patches. You also see, you know, again, we don't see this as much, but just kind of from satellite data, as I look and plan trips, like where the extent, the overall extent of the ice is definitely shrinking. And then you just look at weather patterns. I mean, there's kind of a mentor hero of mine who went to the North Pole in 1986. It was minus 80 at the start of their trip.
Wow.
They wore the soles of their boots off in the first couple of days because the snow was so dry. It was like sandpaper. And, you know, now you might see it's variable, you know, weather is variable and climate is more the general pattern, but, you know, maybe minus 50 or minus 40, minus 30. So just the overall kind of temperature changes. So there's dramatic changes that are happening very significantly for sure.
And as you kind of, you know, I think the question is like when you go to the North Pole the way that you did and you made it, you know, as several times in this show and you've done other things too, but I'm just kind of focusing on the North Pole right now. When you go to a place like that, or I guess we'll throw in, you know, Everest or Antarctica, you go to these places. What is your purpose in doing it? Is it to just go farther than you could ever go before? Is it to kind of take something from that and show it to the rest of the world? And if it's the latter, what is it you're hoping to show to the rest of the world?
That's a good question. And it's evolved over time. I think for me, overall, you know, my background is in environmental science. So I was always very focused in environmental education. So that was kind of a big part of my life. And I got into adventure. I always wanted to do expeditions, but I wasn't like, hey, what's got two thumbs and is totally awesome. You know, I wasn't trying to make it be the Eric show. I was just trying to get people interested in these places. And, you know, I had taken a global climate change class when I was in college in the early 90s, and they were talking about the same science in 1992 that we're talking about today or whatever. And what I stumbled on through, you know, either being a guide or, you know, a straight up educator, was that adventure was a really powerful hook to get people interested in these places and these issues. You know, it doesn't matter what your political background is. It doesn't matter what your ideologies are. You can be interested in adventure, and then we can kind of talk about some of these bigger environmental issues. And so that's always been my personal platform and objective. And it's changed over time as the economy changes and people's, you know, philosophies changes, and, you know, the science necessarily hasn't changed, but the acceptance of science. And so, you know, initially it was just like, hey, let's just get people to believe that global warming exists. We'll take a canoe up to the North Pole, mm-hmm. and we'll show people just that image. And that was like our goal, you know? And then, you know, it spanned to more, you know, kind of political initiatives and things like that. And honestly, even now, just simply, which is maybe less important, but also more important, is just getting people excited about winter and the role that, you know, cold weather plays in our life. Because a lot of times people talk about global warming, they're like, oh yeah, great, I hate winter anyways, you know, but what often is misconstrued with that is that, you know, cold weather, the polar ice caps, those are parts of a healthy planet, and that helps regulate global temperatures. And so my kind of focus has evolved. And simultaneously, I do like this kind of personal push of trying to do difficult things and the challenge of that. It's like fixing a bike, you know. It's like, how do you put all these pieces together so that you can kind of move forward through this environment and achieve this really difficult objective that most people said you couldn't do?
What do you think nature has and wilderness has and gives people? Why do you think it's important?
Oh man, it's a great question. It's a great question, because I wouldn't call myself an old curmudgeon by any stretch, but I feel a little reactive at times. And so I spend a lot of my time, I train a lot on my bike. So I spend a lot of time on my own just thinking, and I'll come across, like, or if I'm hiking, there'll be someone with like a speaker on their backpack, you know, and they'll be hiking in the woods and that music will be blaring and I'll be having this quiet moment. And so that always gets me thinking, like, well, what's the value of silence? Like, part of nature is being quiet. You know, we live in a world now where we have, you know, 24/7 stimuli and electronics. And so just having that time where there isn't any of that is important. You know, and the list goes on from there. It's like, you know, discovering things, whether it's a plant or a scene or a place. I think nature has, you know, presents the opportunity to make mistakes. You know, that's another thing today. We're so afraid to try things because we don't want to look like idiots. And, you know, we were talking about this with kind of risk earlier, but I mean, I made so many mistakes on some of my early adventures, and still to this day, I do, you know, where we come up short or get lost or who knows, take the wrong gear. And, you know, there's, I think a really important part of nature allows you to be able to do those things without any sort of like criticism or whatever. And so I think the list goes on and on in terms of like the value of nature, and we're animals, you know, like we're connected to nature. Like that's part of who we are. And I don't know about you, but man, I'm busy. I'm on the computer all the time and I get out and all of a sudden I'm like, I just feel better. You know, I feel more relaxed and my mind clears up. I'm happy. You know,
it's almost like, as we've seen in society, and I'm no doctor or anything, so if anyone's like, oh, what the hell is he talking about? But this is my opinion, is that we're all on our phones. The more we're on our phones, the more, what do we see now? Anxiety, depression, suicide, right? Rising. Why? Because we're like living here and this is a miserable place to live. And but out there, you know, there are several studies that say just being in nature calms your anxiety. That idea of being bored, boredom is where creativity comes from. And even on another level, you look at all the diseases that have been solved and cured based on things that they find in the rainforest, for example. It's like everything is there, but, you know, yet we destroy it to make more of these screens, you know, which I'm looking at you on a screen. So I'm part of this too. And, you know, I'm part of the deal.
Both of our lives are focused on that. How do you balance your time? Because you're living in a very digital world as well. I'm very curious about that because it's something that I wrestle with as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm very lucky to have a great team. One of my team members is looking at me right now that luckily do a lot of the technology aspect of it. I mean, I started off doing all of that and then got to a pretty good breaking point on that. And then over time, you know, I still do a lot of it. But, you know, it's just nice to have a team to sort of share in that and very help. I couldn't do it without the team is really what it comes down to. But for me personally, the time I personally.
By the way, that sounded like a hostage statement. What you just
you should
said.
See. You should see the way she's looking at me. You're right like, now. She's
you like, got to hold up a newspaper so I know that it's actually today. I need
no,
to
that I do very much so mean it. I do very much so mean it. I just can't. If you look at Colleen right now, and it, you know, for people who listen to the podcast a lot, they know that Colleen and I have a very interesting dynamic in the intros where she gives me hell all the time. So she keeps looking at me and giving me a weird look and it's making me self-conscious. But the truth of the matter is I really do. I couldn't do without them. And I think they do great.
Of course.
But yeah, there's really something nice about turning it off and just going outside.
Well, I have kids and which is the most amazing thing for me. But I grew up in a time, my buddies and I talk about this all the time. We're like, how lucky were we that nobody had phones and nobody was recording any of the stupid stuff that we did because we would not be, you know, I would not be living a free life probably. Who knows? but I think the other part of that is, you know, we did things and me especially, I did things because I was interested in them. So I, you know, wanted to ride my bike. So I just started riding my bike. I wanted to do this trip. So I just started to do, you know, this camping trip. And that was the extent of it. And so I think about my kids and, you know, we do a ton of outside stuff. We can't, my son is a hardcore skier and he's 11. I mean, he's a way better skier than me. I always tell him, like, dude, I grew up in Wisconsin and I was skiing in jeans at Little Switzerland, you know, like you have all the best gear and you're on a 12,000 foot mountain, you know, right. There's
Step
just no,
off.
Yeah. And he's like, come on, dad. And I'm like, and I'm literally scared looking at the stuff that he's like basically going backwards down.
Oh my God.
But anyway, so I think about it with my kids because there is a balance. I mean, like, I love technology. There's a lot of good aspects of technology. But you see that them get sucked into it pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And so I do really, but I do believe in that connection to nature for an individual level, but also in terms of, you know, kind of a global health environmental level as well.
No, I do think, and also I thought this is where you were going with that, but back in like when you were growing up, when there was no social media, you did stuff because you wanted to do stuff. You didn't necessarily do stuff because you wanted a picture of you doing stuff. And I think that changes how we interact with, things. And sometimes if we sort of scrape the surface of an experience to sort of get a picture or to put it out there, as opposed to really doing it because you genuinely want to do it. I mean, maybe there's a difference in that as well.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to be negative about it, but there's kind of this hyper reality that exists, where you're just creating these situations just for the image and you're not really diving in. And so much of life happens below the surface, you know, and that's part of the reason why I do these long expeditions. Like, how do you get to know a place? Like, you can kind of get to know it by driving across and looking out the window and whatever. And on a bike, you're a little slower, hiking, you're even slower and you kind of understand what this hill is. But when you're in a place for, you know, a week or a month or 2 months, like, you really begin to understand the nuance of what that area is like. And I think that kind of permeates into all, like, there's just, it's not right or wrong, left or right. There's so much more nuance and everything. And so we're just not getting it. And I will say, I don't mean to blow sunshine up you, but that's where I was sick for a couple of years and I was looking at some of the stuff and it was just brutal. And that's when I think I started stumbling on some of your stuff and I just found it really funny.
Oh, nice.
Because it wasn't like, hey, I'm trying to be this certain thing. I'm just having a good time and, you know, kind of pointing out some quirks of our place or whatever. And so I really enjoyed that, actually.
Oh, thank you.
It was refreshing for me.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm glad I could entertain you a bit with that, you know. It's nice when you come from that place and you see those things. And I sort of stumbled upon that, you know. I didn't realize people would take to it the way they did. So I got lucky in that regard. It's that sense of home, you know.
Totally.
What is the craziest thing you've ever encountered out there in the wild?
Crazy is a relative term.
Okay.
You know?
What's the closest you've come to a near death situation? Let's start.
Oh,
with
I mean, I've had polar bears jump on my tent while I'm sleeping in them.
Really?
Oh yeah. You know, polar bears, you can't think about any of these things. Like, you get kind of a little gallows humor going on. You're like, oh, that was close. Because if you stop and like really be like, oh man, then you start getting pretty nervous. But there was a time where this was off the coast of Russia and we were just in this crazy situation. It was all this open water. Wherever there was open water, there were seals. Polar bears eat seals. So there's lots of polar bears around. And what they do is they jump on kind of these ice chunks when the seals are having the babies and they smash, because the seals have their babies underneath, and they smash the seals under there and then they eat them. And so this polar bear like basically did that to the front of our tent, you know, the vestibule, the part that we're not necessarily sleeping in. But so the whole tent kind of caved down on us. And, you know, I woke up and was somewhat alarmed. And
Wow.
But I've had, a lot of polar bears encounters. I've had a lot of black bear encounters over the years. I've been chased by a moose. you know, avalanches on Everest. You know, you, it's just like the more you're out, the more stuff that happens. But I will say I'm a pretty careful guy. I'm not the guy jumping off the cliff and being like, you know, like, I'm a slow chess game guy. I mean, I don't know if that's because I'm from Wisconsin or if it's just the nature of my personality.
It's a very Midwest of you.
It's, well, I have to explain
this one cautious.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have to explain it to my wife all the time, cause she's from the East Coast and she's like, so straightforward and, you know, doesn't, you know, always tells it like it is. I'm like, you could sugarcoat it a little bit, you know, like doesn't hurt to say one nice thing, you know? So I'm like, you gotta, and we'll go back to the Midwest and we'll go into the gas station and she'll be like, why was that person being so nice to me? I'm like, that's just how they are, you know? She doesn't get it.
that does take a while, especially from the East Coast. There's a little bit of a learning curve there.
Yeah. She's just like, am I, you know, what's going on here? And I'm like, no, just get used to it. It's going to happen everywhere.
We're almost at time here, but I wanted to ask, you know, sort of your advice for people who are, you know, maybe like the outdoors and they're looking to kind of start their first adventure. Maybe it's a solo hiking trip. Maybe it's going to a mountain they've never gone to before. What would be, you know, your top tips for kind of a new experience and one you're unfamiliar with?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, first of all, Wisconsin's a great place to start. Anywhere is really, but there's so many cool areas all over Wisconsin. But I think my big tip is just to get out and do something, anything. Don't let the idea of it like impede your ability to just go out and try. And ultimately just starting small. Like I've seen so many people want to do these big trips for the first, you know, it's their first time out. And then they just get into that first hour and it's just overwhelming. Their pack's too heavy. They got the wrong gear, whatever it is. And so I think, you know, a great thing is just starting small, you know, go on a little hike, go on an overnight, you know, not even a long overnight. We do this with our kids a lot. We'll just go drive up the afternoon. We'll hike 3 miles up a mountain, set up camp and come back. It's like 23 hour thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's not this big consequence. So I'm a huge fan of just, and we'll even just set up our tent in our backyard and sleep out there. Like I got my kids winter camping when they were just like 2 years old and we just were in the backyard, you know? That's and, cool. So I think that's a big thing. And then there's, you know, now there's a lot of stuff online, obviously, even though we were just dissing online, there are a lot of great resources and there are also a lot of groups, where you know, you can go out and learn from other people for, you know, this didn't really exist when I was in school, but I know just if anybody's in college or university or even high schools, I think have some pretty awesome outdoor programs and getting involved there and, you know, doing whatever. But ultimately for me, my biggest advice, just get outside, just go do something and keep going.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you and follow you?
They can find me in my tent somewhere cold, probably, because that's where I like to be. Yeah. If you Google I hate my website URL, but it's old and I'm redoing it. It's from like 1980, but ericlarsonexplorer.com. But I do the whole Instagram or social EL Explorer. You can just Google Eric Larson, Wisconsin.
Awesome.
I think my name comes up.
Perfect, man. Well, hey, yeah. Thank you so much. And is that, I should have asked this before I asked that last one, but is there anything you think I should have asked about that I didn't, or any final thoughts that you have?
I was surprised to, because I, like I said, I went down the rabbit hole. So I was really interested. I was glad that we got to talk a lot about the environmental stuff because that doesn't necessarily happen. And I thought the other topics would have been like Midwest beauty queens.
Yeah.
that was like, how am I following this lady on Instagram, this Alex Worley? And I was like, why is this lady keep popping up?
Oh yeah.
And then I found out that you had a connection to her, which
yes, I did.
Which we don't need to get into now, but I was very, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. I got lost. And then we touched on
broadcasting from the City Deck Studios on North Washington Street. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Thanksgiving will be here soon, and I can't wait to spend the day with family and friends just catching up, playing games, and settling in for a big turkey dinner. This may sound weird, but my favorite part of a big turkey dinner is the gravy. I pour it on my turkey, potatoes, stuffing, and there's always plenty of Village Heart Thinner Rolls to help soak up every drop. And whether you prefer classic white or wheat, 12-grain or sweet Hawaiian, a basket of warm Village Heart Thinner Rolls is the natural choice for Thanksgiving dinner.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. United Auto Workers Union President Sean Fain on a live stream today doing a victory lap after a tentative agreement between the union and General Motors following Ford and Stellantis.